session number 18614, real one.
Jack Holness, real one. Where were you born, please?
In Hull, on the Hesler Road, on the 2nd of the 12th, 1920.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a blacksmith in the fishing industry.
And did you go to school in Hull?
I went to the Westwick Avenue Boys' School, yes.
How old were you when you left there?
14.
In 1934?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I actually got a job 2 weeks before the school leaving date as an errand boy. Locally, at a beer off shop.
What jobs did you eventually do after that?
We had a neighbour and friend who was a fish merchant, and I went into the fishing industry to learn the wholesale business, which I eventually did. And over the years, I went forward in the business, learned the business, and eventually became assistant manager of the rather large UK company belonging to Unilever called Mac Fisheries. You'll have heard of them. And I became assistant manager in Hull here in the wholesale business.
Did you join the army before the war?
No, I volunteered on a regular enlistment December 1940, but I didn't go right away because of the squad system in the Guards. I wasn't sent for until the 3rd of March 1941.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did indeed.
Under what circumstances?
I think I was at home at the time, because if I remember rightly, it was a weekend when war was declared, when Neville Chamberlain actually declared war on Germany. And I think I was with the family, sitting at home, expecting this announcement.
How did you feel when you heard the news?
Mixed feelings, because of my age. And having already made up my mind that I would join the service before they came after me.
And were you in the bombing of Hull in the early part of the war?
Very slight, before I actually went away. There were incidents.
What do you remember of it?
I do remember one night in particular, because it was the usual procedure to get ushered into the shelter, which we had in the garden. But on the particular night, as I remember, I had a friend who was going into the Marines, and he was about to celebrate his 21st birthday, and we're invited to a party in First Lane, Hesle. And of course, blackout, everything was blacked out. And my dear wife, who was my girlfriend then, we were going to this party along with her brother and his girlfriend. And we decided we'd have a taxi. So as telephones were limited in those days, Frank, my brother-in-law, later brother-in-law, and myself, decided to walk down Hesler Road, bearing in mind we were living in the Gypsyville area then, which is over the road, and we walked down Hesler Road to try and get hold of a taxi to come back and pick us all up, go along. As we're going along Hesler Road, things started to get a little bit hairy up the top. German bombers were overhead, and they started dropping. We went to a taxi spot along Hesler Road called Atkins. It was a lady that drove in those days. Well, obviously, with the situation as it was, she wouldn't come out. So after shop doorway hopping along Hesel Road all the way back to Gypsyville, and the guns going off in the Costello Park here, which there were four very big anti-aircraft guns in there booming out, and there was a bit of shrapnel kicking around, so we made our way back eventually, running the gauntlet along the Hesel Road back to Gypsyville. Sequel to that is, we never did get to that party that night. It wasn't possible because it would have been too difficult to walk in the dark, because for one thing, all the way down the first lane, as they called it then, there was a dike, and anyone could have walked into the dike very easily. So disappointingly, we didn't get to that 21st birthday party.
What was your address in those days?
My address was 14 River Grove, Gypsyville, with my parents, of course. That was my parents' home.
Did any bombs fall in your home area?
In the vicinity, yes. In actual fact, my then girlfriend lived across the road at number 33. And in later years, apparently there was a landmine dropped in allotments which were over the road, which they still exist now, some of them, on the Gypsyville Hesel Road area. And a landmine dropped in there, and apparently it sent up great big boulders of clay and whatever right over the area, and a great big boulder dropped on the roof of my girlfriend's house through the roof and damaged the bedroom and what have you, did certain damage, and all the windows around for hundreds of yards around, all blowing, including my parents' windows, fell out. But nobody was hurt, just showers of glass, all the windows blowing out. That was one instance, apparently. Whilst I was away in the army, of course, this happened during the bombing.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing in Hull?
Wonderfully well. Wonderfully well. I think the civilian population were very, very brave people. They went through equally as much as a lot of us went through. This is how I feel about it. I mean, we lost a lot of lives in Hull during the Blitz. And in my family's particular case, my mother was suffering before the war with a problem. We sent her away for a few months to build her strength up. As the war started, she went into West Riding, into a relative of my brother's wife, and she stayed there. She built up her strength, and she came back and went through all the bombing. Bearing in mind, she'd been even frightened of thunder and lightning when I was a child. She used to hide in the, what we used to call the gas cupboard, in the dark. Mum and... she got strengthened up and went through all the bombing. I have a little anecdote whilst I'm talking about this. Before I actually went into the army myself, this would be in 1939 or early 40, my brother and I shared a bedroom, and being blacked out, pitch black, you had to know your way around, which you would possibly in your own room. We were in bed one night when the sirens went late on, and Mother, being the nervous person she was, shouted, "Get up quickly, get into the shelter." And Father had made it very, very comfortable, put bed in and a bunk bed, and it was a very comfortable place, electric fire and everything. And me being the nature I was, I wouldn't upset my mum. I would get up immediately to go down and into the shelter. My brother was always different to me. He was harder, harsher, bit of a rebel. And he said, "Oh, I'm stopping here." I'm not bothered about Hitler and his bombs. I'm staying where I am. Anyway, I was sleeping near the window and had to come round the foot of the bed to come out of the door. He was nearer to the door, which in that case the bed would be at the back of the door. And eventually, with coercion from my father, "Get up, Bill, get down here to the shelter and do as you're told," this sort of thing. And I'm just going down the stairs. Bill got out of bed, walked into the door, the back of the door, with his face, and out came the expletive that...
Say it, go on.
That bastard Hitler hitting his nose on the back of the door. Things you remember, like this, stands out. That bastard Hitler's done that. And that's the first time I'd heard him come out with expletive like that.
Was this an Anderson shelter in the garden that you had?
No, it was... there were 18-inch thick concrete, square ones, which my dad, being a do-it-yourself man even in those days, drilled right through the concrete and put 2-foot-long bolts through, great big bolts, and bolted a bunk into the higher part. He went down through and put a ventilator in, and it was very, very comfortable. The first time I ever slept with my dear wife, which was only my girlfriend of early times then, was on that top bunk. The pair of us were kicked up there on the top bunk. That was the I always kid her on about this, we always did. The first time we slept together was on that top bunk in the shelter. And Mum and my then girl's mum, who we used to bring into our shelter because she was alone, she was a widow, and she used to come and stay, and my mum and girlfriend's mum used to sleep on that bed at the bottom, which Dad put in there. And we built a blast wall outside the entrance, made it very, very comfortable.
And this was just for the use of your family?
This was just for family use. And of course, as I say, my girl's mother, because she was alone.
Now, can you repeat what you were telling me before about actually going into the army, please?
As I say, I volunteered in December 40 and was eventually sent for, because of the squad system in the Guards then, which was about 4 months, 18 weeks or so, I'd just missed the squadding. So I was sent for on the 3rd of... I had to go down to Caterham on the 3rd of March, 41.
Why had you volunteered for the army?
I wanted to go where I wanted to go. And initially, I wanted to go into the CMP, into the military police, with a view to going into the civilian police if I made it after the war. But at that time, they were not recruiting for the CMP, and the recruiting officer in Hull at that time, in Chapel Street here, was a gentleman called, he used his old military title, Major McDermott, who was in turn the commissioner for West Hull Boy Scouts, of which I did many years in the West Hull Boy Scouts, and I'd known him from those days. He was a Scotsman, Major McDermott. And he said to me, "What about the Guards, boy?" Well, I had in mind, if the CMP wasn't available, to join the Guards, having a cousin who'd actually been recruited into the Guards in Preston. He was a Hull man, but he was working over in Fleetwood, so he was recruiting, which were a recruiting area for the Scots Guards, and he'd been put in the Scots Guards, no option, because of his age. they were calling people up at that time, and he was put into the Scots Guards. And of course, Major Mac, being a Scot, he said, "What about the Scots Guards, boy?" So I thought, this is going to be a little bit difficult. My mum's a Scot, my dad's a Yorkshireman. I don't want to upset anyone, so I'll put one foot either side of the border and I'll go for the Coldstream, which I did.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'11 and 3/4 when I finished, but I was only 5'10 and a half when I joined up.
So you were called up in March 41 to go to Caterham?
I went to Caterham on the 3rd of March 41.
What happened at Caterham?
Like happens to all recruits of the Guards, you're a little apprehensive when you walk up the hill with your little suitcase, get to the guard room, and I was alone, actually. I arrived by myself, but I was taken by an orderly from the guard room down to the reception area, where I encountered possibly another 20-odd personnel for the various regiments who were at that time, which the whole of them were their recruits, but they were sent on from there. I was given to understand there were 34 of us eventually at the reception, and 17 of us got through. The rest were discarded, and they would have finished up, I'm given to understand, in such regiments as the Pioneer Corps. And you had a medical in your hometown when you first join up, but then you have a more rigorous medical at the depot, the guards depot, and it's acceptance or not. They weed you out, and this is exactly what happened. And I felt quite elated to think I was fit enough to be accepted, because only a year earlier I'd had a bout of pleurisy, and I was worried about the chest situation. But I felt elated when I'd had the double medical, which I had, and was passed through.
So you had your basic training at Caterham?
That was the initial depot training, which consists of mainly drill, 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 and more drill. A forming of a guardsman. And our dad, we didn't get out of those walls until probably 8 weeks afterwards, until you could carry yourself like a guardsman. The training was the same as it was, I'm given to understand, from early years, the 1930s. There was no difference. We did 18 weeks, and into that came a bit of musketry, of course, and rifle drill, but it was mainly to turn you out as a guardsman, give you the discipline required to move on.
How did they go about that, turning you into a guardsman?
I would think they found it very difficult to start with a lot of us. It wasn't so hard for me. I didn't find it too hard. As I say, it may sound silly, but a lot of years in the Boy Scouts had helped me, you know, a bit of drill and all the rest of it, this sort of thing. And discipline, if you've been disciplined as a child, it didn't come too hard. I personally enjoyed my time at the depot. I enjoyed the rigorous training, the discipline, and the fact that I felt I could jump over the moon. It was hard, but it was clean and good.
Did you how did you feel about the way in which you were treated by the people in charge of the basic depot training?
Very well, very well. It didn't bother me in the least. In fact, I've used the term, I remarked earlier about this cousin of mine in the Scots Guards. He was quite a number of years older than myself, about 9 years older, but he was still a bit of a mummy's boy. And he used to write letters home to his mum, which were, I thought, and his mum used to show them to my mum. And these letters were all about the discipline and how the sergeants, I won't use the term bullied, but shouted at them, and he wasn't too keen on this. Whereas when I got in, I decided my letters would be rather glowing, which I did, and I probably made him look a bit of a namby-pamby, because I laughed at it. As I say, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
So you didn't experience anything that you could describe as bullying or sadism?
No, not in the least. Whilst you're a rookie, you feel you don't want to let them get to know your name too much. My name wasn't too easy. It wasn't like Smith and Jones. So you keep a low profile in the squad. You were soon weeded out, and your squad instructor soon defined who were what you might call front rank soldiers or front squad soldiers and all the rest of it, which I always was. I was a front rank soldier in his squad. And there were certain things used to happen. For instance, I was on parade one Saturday morning. A Saturday morning, we used to call it, we were getting used to marching with a band. So they used to bring out the corps of drums on a Saturday morning parade. And we did about, I forget, probably half, three quarters of an hour with the corps of drums marching round the square. And I was called off the square one particular Saturday morning. And I say I was about 7 weeks squadded, I think, something like that. And I thought an orderly had arrived from headquarter company, spoke to the squad instructor, called out my name, and immediately I thought if I was wanted in that manner at headquarters, that something had happened at home with regards to the family and the bombing going on, and aware of all this. But I got down to the RSM's bunk in headquarters, and I was told to report to the headquarter company store. Got to the stores, and I was just confronted with a rugby jersey, a pair of shorts, socks. Have you got your own boots? Yes, I've got a pair of boots. What's this all about? You're playing for the depot this afternoon. Playing for the depot? I said. How come? Well, you played rugby at school, and it's on your papers that you played rugby. They're short of a full-back. The depot team's short of a full-back. So report to main gates at 1:45. That's it. That's what I got. Now, as I said previously, you didn't get out of the depot, but I could get out of the depot at 1 o'clock that day to board a bus to go to the then training battalion at Pairbright to play against the Welsh Guards. I didn't know a soul. I was a rookie. I felt about 5'2" alongside the people that were there, junior officers, senior NCOs playing for the depot side. I went along to Pairbright on the bus, and I played against the Welsh Guards, never having played a rugby union match in my life. Rugby league as a boy and junior rugby, and I'm given the role fullback for the depot side. I played a rugby league fullbacks game, finding touch in and out the field of play with the ball from kicking. When the ball came to me, the first time it came to me, and I've got 8 Welsh guardsmen 6 foot 6, down to about 6, bearing down on me, and I went to ground with the ball. Hung on for dear life, which you do in rugby league, and play the ball. And I just felt myself being picked up bodily, thrown aside, and the ball going loose. A few scrapes, played out until half time. The skipper came to me, he said, "Where did you play your rugby?" I said, "I've never played this game in my life, Sergeant." He said, "Kick the ball direct into touch." I said, "That's easy." "That's too easy." I played the second half. Now the ball came, out it went into touch. Suffice to say, after the second half, I kept my place for the next two matches for the Depot side. That was my first bit of fun in the army. And when I got back, the lads all wanted to know what Pairbright looked like, because that was our next port of call after leaving the
Did the Depot. German Air Force ever attack Caterham or Pairbright?
Well, yes, indeed. Yes. Yes, because there was an aerodrome just beyond Caterham. Can't remember the name now. Kenley was just over the other side, and the guard room was occasionally machine gunned, and they were after Kenley Aerodrome rather than Caterham. Prior to my getting to Caterham, of course, in 1940, they did actually bomb the depot. The Germans bombed the depot, and there were one or two Irish guardsmen killed, actually. But that was before I arrived there.
What happened to you at Pairbright?
Well, Pairbright is your next stop after the depot, and then that is when your field training starts. You start on your real field training. But most of my time there, I was, after my weapon training and passing out on different things, which you, in those days, you, with your weapon training, you could become what they call the marksman, and you got a weekend away from home as a reward for being a marksman and your shooting, which I managed. And then I decided to take on, we were given the option of taking on driver maintenance courses, signal course, which I decided the signal course. And I went on a 13-week signal course there, which was to result in the fact that I was put onto a draft for the 3rd Battalion very quickly, more so than others, because there were about 20-odd of us in the signal platoon, and having knowledge of signals from my Boy Scout days and so forth, foolishly, I was top of the squad in the signal platoon with my knowledge, and I soon picked up the Morse code and all the rest of it and the wireless procedure. And throughout your course, you're shown your position, percentage, results throughout your course. And I and one of my pals was 1-2 on the course. So at the end of 13 weeks, you are passed out by a Royal Corps signals officer, and you do about a 3-hour written test, and you do your practical as well. But prior to that test coming off, we were confronted in the barrack room one day with the signal sergeant, and he said, "I want 2 volunteers for the 3rd Battalion in the Middle East from the signal squad. The 3rd Battalion requires 2 young signalers. Therefore, I'm asking for 2 volunteers." Bearing in mind this,